Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Hello, thanks again for being here at The Avid Reader, sponsored by Wellington Square Bookshop. Today, our guest is Tatiana Durone. It's so cool that the last time we spoke was in 2010, talking about Sarah's Key, which is usually how Tatiana is introduced, and A Secret Kept. At that time, it was my first interview. I had no idea what I was doing. I probably still don't. There's so much more you need to know about her, but look at her Wikipedia entry, because if I were to give you a history of her family and her career, it would take all the time we've allotted.
That's true. So let's not.
Suffice it to say, you've published 12 novels now, I guess one more in French, six in English, and this new one. Now, this is where I'm saying this because the parallels. Tatiana has also worked in television as a screenwriter. Sarah's Key was also a film, which you may remember. She has been listed as one of France's top novelists many times and is bilingual in French and English. Some of these attributes I mentioned because they may definitely come up later in the interview when I ask the old chestnut of a question, is this book autobiographical? Mm-hmm. So Tatiana's latest book, Flowers of Darkness, a quote from Virginia Woolf, not the last time you'll hear her name today, was published just this week by St. Martin's Press. So we're transported to a near future, a future that unfortunately possesses a prescience that we may not be able to elude as a species. We're in Paris, a Paris that has metamorphosized itself and not for the better. It's been wounded gravely, and there are no birds, bees, or flowers or trees to observe this wounding. And Clarissa, our protagonist, is a writer, one who speaks both French and English fluently, and writes in that way as well. Whether she thinks in either language is a question that arises frequently for her and others. So in this newly minted city, Clarissa finds herself looking for a new home and finds one dedicated to fostering the talents of artists. And what could be better? Well, maybe so, maybe not. Clarissa loves spaces and houses, and she loves both Virginia Woolf and Romain Gary, and makes no bones about it. Both of whom, as you know, committed suicide, but in very different ways, with very different notes. As the book progresses and we get to know Clarissa, her daughter Jordan, and her granddaughter Andy, things begin to happen. And that doesn't even take into account her miscreant of an almost former husband and a former husband who is her best friend. And because she understands spaces, Clarissa has also created one for herself, a kind of cave or lake, which Virginia agrees with, in which she's placed something precious and lost. So what do you do when the life you thought was starting over takes a turn that's both exciting and really scary? So as they say, let's find out. So welcome, Tatiana, and thanks so
Thank
much
you.
For joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
I guess I do have to ask it at first, which I don't usually do, but how autobiographical is this book? Because there's so many parallels.
Well, you know something I've discovered now, because this is probably my, I think, 12th published book in all, counting the French ones, the ones that I wrote in French and that are not published in England. A lot of people tend to think it's you because the story rings true. And therefore, they think if she wrote it that way, it means she went through it and therefore it's her. So there are parallels. Clarissa is Franco-British like me. She is a writer. She is fond of places and spaces, Virginia Woolf, Romain Gary. But I would say that it really ends there, because her story is definitely not mine. Her marital woes are not mine. And what she discovers, obviously, the rather difficult truth concerning her husband, that has not happened to me, and I hope it never will. I think what is what sounds very, very autobiographical is that she is I catch her at a very personal moment in her life where she's obviously reliving some very difficult episodes of her past. And many people, when they read this book, because this book has already been published in France and in the Netherlands, many people thought that a lot of those experiences were mine, but they're not. So I'd say she's like my big sister, because she's quite a bit older than me. This book takes place in 2035, although I don't give any dates. The reader has to work it out for herself or himself. So she's roughly in her early 70s. I'm not quite there yet. I'm still only 59 for the moment. But I suppose she could be me in 15 years' time. So it's
yeah. Yes. So, well, let's, as an entree to the story itself, let's talk a little bit, as much as you want to, because I always try and stay away from spoilers, and sometimes I fail. Just stop me if I'm getting close.
Okay.
What's happened to Paris in your book?
Okay. I'm looking out of a window right now. I can't show it to you because I can't turn my computer around, but I'm actually living really where Clarissa lives. The Eiffel Tower is right there, about 200 meters away. Okay. What happened in Paris? I imagined that in 2024, during the Olympic Games, there was a terrible attack, which I hope never happens. And all this part of Paris, where the Eiffel Tower is, I don't know if you've been to the, I don't know if you've been to Paris recently. Maybe you have. Well, so you probably know where the Eiffel Tower is. And that garden all around it, which is called the Champ de Mars. So all that part of Paris has been, well, the reader will discover, we won't go into great detail, but that part of Paris has been scarred forever. And so a new area has grown up there with very modern buildings and this fake vegetation. So the rest of Paris is more or less the same with its, you know, Haussmannian buildings and beautiful gray roofs, and Montmartre is still there. And Notre Dame in my book has been completely rebuilt. So that's good, because when I wrote the book, Notre Dame was burning, remember?
Yes.
Awful sight.
I know. I thought of the timbers and how old the timbers were. That's what I kept thinking.
It's awful. Anyway, so the area that Clarissa lives in is very different, but otherwise the rest of Paris is more or less the same. And Notre Dame has been completely revamped and resuscitated in my book.
It's interesting because we could spend the entire time talking about Virginia Woolf or Romain Gary, and they are so interwoven. And it's so funny. I saw an interview with you done, it was more than 10 years ago. It was right when Sarah's Key came out. And for some reason, it was
that was still 14 years ago.
Okay, geez.
Yeah, 2007, okay?
Oh, man.
I know.
Well, the interview was kind of silly constructed, not because of you, but it was a disembodied man asking you questions, and you were just standing there by yourself. I mean, they said thank you, and you said, he goes, would you talk about the book? And you say, gladly. And it's just you standing there, and he keeps asking you questions, and it reminded me of when you were first, not you, Clarissa was first introduced to Mrs. Dalloway.
Oh, right.
And it was like the same kind of questioning. And so what, you know, eventually we'll talk about the epigraphs and the cover, but tell us who Mrs. Dalloway is in literature and who Mrs. Dalloway is in your book.
With pleasure. Mrs. Dalloway is the heroine of a beautiful novel by Virginia Woolf, which was published, I think, in 1925? Something like that. Yeah. And Mrs. Dalloway is getting ready for a party. And she goes, and the book begins with her going to choose the flowers herself. And that very famous first sentence, Mrs. Dalloway said she would choose the flowers herself. Anyway, Virginia Woolf follows Clarissa Dalloway's entire life in just one day. Everything, that's the incredible power of the stream of consciousness. We see Clarissa Dalloway's life unfold in front of us in one entire day as she gets ready for this part. But why did I choose Mrs. Dalloway? Because Clarissa, my heroine, loves Virginia Woolf. And when she moves into this high-tech smart home in the Casa Residence for Artists that she has just been accepted in, she is told that she has a virtual assistant in her flat, and she has to find a name for this virtual assistant. And she immediately thinks of calling it Mrs. Dalloway, and then she chooses a lovely voice with a very British accent, which I can put on if you want me to. But little does she know that this virtual assistant, this Mrs. Dalloway, is going to be much, much more than a voice answering her every beck and call, for example, with the kettle on, read my emails, prepare the list for the supermarket, etc. Mrs. Dalloway is going to become a problem here, as we will find out.
Well, you know, as a bookseller, I'm always interested in covers and epigraphs. And I've said it so many times that everyone's sick of it, but everyone who comes into my bookstore judges, notwithstanding the cliche, they judge the book by its cover. And your cover is excellent, which we can talk about in a minute, but I'm also interested in epigraphs. And your book has a master epigraph, but then it has many epigraphs throughout that talk about the end of two lives, Virginia's and Romaine's. But the main epigraph is from Gaston Bachelard, which kind of encapsulates the book. And so did you take a long time thinking of what it would be, or did it spring forth first and then the book came from it?
I knew that I wanted to talk about Gaston Bachelard because he is one of the first philosophers, scientists who really study the importance of space and houses and rooms in literature. I don't know if he's very famous in the States, but he's very famous here in France. And I knew that I wanted to talk about how what Virginia Woolf calls a room of one's own is more than just a room, say the room that I'm here in now, which is where I work, or the room where you are in. There's also the psychological rooms, the psychic rooms that we occupy in our minds. And that's what I wanted to get at. And then I chose these two writers, Virginia Woolf, Romain Gary, who were so attached to their homes. Virginia was attached to her home in Monk's house, and Romain Gary was very attached to his apartment on the Rue du Bac. And then interestingly, when I read their farewell letters, because I hate using the word suicide
note.
It sounds so sad. But when you read the beautiful texts of the letter that Virginia Woolf left for her husband, Leonard, and the letter that Romain Gary left at the foot of his bed, there are so many clues in there about who they really were and their lives. And that's why I decided to build the story around those letters. And it kind of like was a sort of a stepping stone, me following them as I was following Clarissa along her own path. Interestingly enough, I have not yet received my author copies. Can you believe it? I can only show you the French edition, which has a very different.
Oh, yeah.
A very different copy, a very different look, which is called Les Fleurs de l'Ombre. So this is, as you know, a book that I wrote in French and in English at the same time, which was a rather interesting, but I don't think I'll do it again. I don't think I'll write a book at the same time in the two languages.
Clarissa did, and Clarissa did too.
Yeah, I think it kind of drove me crazy.
I don't have the cover either because you sent me a NetGalley, but I've seen the cover. I should have printed it out. The cover in America.
Oh, no, I've seen it. Of course, I've seen it. And yesterday I did an event online. And it's just that the books are stuck somewhere, as you know.
Everything is closed down
because of the COVID. So I think my publishers have sent me the books, but they're just not here. So I'm so sad. I'd love to see it. It looks beautiful.
I love it. Well, you can describe it, but I can describe it too. It's interesting because it's somewhat paradoxical.
I can bring it up on my iPad. We can do that. It's a very beautiful cover.
I like it
actually much more than the French cover.
Me too.
The art director knows that I'm very fond of blue. So he or she wanted to work on something that was close to my favorite color. And here it goes. It looks like this. Here we go.
Yes. And the interesting thing is, it doesn't look like the room that she has.
No, it doesn't.
Except for the curvilinear part in the lower left corner, which gives you an idea of what you think the house looks like. And in the mirror, the picture of the woman looks kind of like you.
I know. It's very strange. It does, although my hair now is more silver.
But the style of the hair.
But I think that you're right. I think that I tried to point out that I thought that the picture was perhaps wasn't too modern enough, but they wanted to give it a Parisian touch, a French touch. And it had to be a little bit vintage. It is very pretty. I am very fond of it. I think it's beautifully done, and I can't wait to get the book.
It's taking
its time.
and it will be a book that people will pick up, and the cover will be intriguing to them. And also, it's not one of those books that, even though it has a woman on the cover, it's not one of those books that's going to
let me show you something amusing.
Okay.
This is going to be the paperback edition of the French one. And I kind of like this too.
Oh, yeah. Now, see, that's the room. That's the house.
Yeah.
That's the cat.
And there's the cat.
Oh, yeah. That's what it is. But
I like that too. I like that.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny you talk about blue because Clarissa has these beautiful blue eyes that Andy is so jealous of.
Which I don't have, by the way.
Well, here's the thing. The way I looked at the book, green was the most important color for a couple of reasons. Her father's green eyes, yes. Andy's eyes.
Yes.
The greenish abyss.
You have really read this book carefully.
Yeah, I think people mean it as a compliment, but I think it's more a compliment to you, because if you read a book carefully, it must be a good book. Otherwise,
I'm glad, but you know, one sometimes does interviews with people who don't read your books carefully. But go back to the green. I find this very interesting.
Okay, so Clarissa's favorite color, when she tells Mrs. Dalloway, she does say green. Her father's green eyes, Andy's eyes, the greenish abyss, Jordan's favorite color when she puts on the bathing suit. She puts on Jordan's bathing suit at the end when she goes to see Toby. And also, most importantly, the Viridian that Virginia Woolf paints her walls
with. You are so right.
That her sister mocks gently. Right. I do not like that Viridian color. I like green, but like you, I like, well, look, this is my color.
Right.
That's the color I love. But isn't that strange? Maybe you didn't even know that, but there it is.
But I love green, and it's true that when I went to Monk's house, because I really did go to Monk's house,
I really
did sit on Virginia Woolf's bed. This is true, thanks to a journalist. And I was very impressed by the intensity of that green when you walk into her living room. It's so green, but it's just like you can't imagine it being any other color. It's so almost British as well. You know what I mean? It's very a British color.
Oh yeah, it very much. And the thing is, what I did was I went to Google Images because I didn't know what Viridian was, and it does vary, but it's an interesting color, and it also has a certain contextual time frame to it, because you don't see that particular green.
No, you don't. I think it was probably very fashionable at one point.
And it's funny because, again, a parallel, you did lay on the bed, Clarissa lays on the bed, and you even acknowledged that.
I actually didn't dare lie on it. I sat on it.
Okay. Well, I worried about that when Clarissa got on it, because I was thinking she needs to make sure she gets rid of the depression in it when she leaves, because she shouldn't really be in it at all.
No, but the lady took pity on her.
Yeah. And
let her in.
Oh, you know, the other thing that's weird is with regard to the epigraph, for some reason, I remember Sartre and Being in Nothingness refers to him and talks about what his book, Water and Dreams. And the book is about, your book is about water and dreams. And I was like,
that's
so
true.
Well, I know.
That's a link that I had not thought of.
And then also I had the trouble finding you under Skype because it comes up as...
Oh, no, don't give the name.
Okay, I won't. Okay, well, okay. But
otherwise otherwise it rings all the time.
Oh, I'm so glad that you said that.
Yes.
There's so many things in the book and you about names that people don't like, names that they give themselves.
Yeah,
right. So there's all that. And you just did the same thing yourself. And I read about the fig tree in one of the blog entries, and then I realized Virginia Woolf also talks about fig trees. So it's not in the book.
That's an old blog.
Yeah, I didn't know. I couldn't find you, and then there are Tatiana de Rones. There's like three of them.
Oh, there's so many. There's so many on the I mean, so many fake ones.
Yeah, but you can understand how I was confused because I saw the name that you told me, the name that I dare not say.
No, don't say it.
So I talk a little bit. I mean, I jump around. I'm sorry because
it's
people
okay.
haven't read it. But talk a little bit about her continuing underwater dream and her hypnotist and the box, because I want to tell you something about one of my dreams.
So Clarissa has undergone a great trauma in her past as a young mother. And this is something that she has never really dealt with and perhaps has not known how to deal with, really, except that she divorced, which was probably not a good idea. But anyway, she divorced. And when she moves into this apartment, she remembers her hypnotism sessions with somebody who really helped her all those years ago, who had a very soothing voice. Hypnotism is something that I discovered quite late in my life. At one point when I was stressed about certain things, and I did a couple of sessions, and it really helped me. But I also find that as a writer, it opens up your creativity in the most extraordinary way. And it's almost as if all these images and things that I had never thought of were opening up in my mind and helping me go further and further. So Clarissa thinks back to this very powerful session where she visualizes this lake, which comes back, as you pointed out, regularly throughout the book, and this box in which she has to let something free. And it was interesting for me to describe all that, because even though this didn't happen to me, this is not my story, I didn't go through that thing with the box. But to describe it was an interesting challenge as a writer, to sort of try and take my reader into that imaginary, watery, mysterious place where she lets something out, goes back up to the surface.
Want to hear my dream?
Yeah, definitely.
So my father was a mythological creature to me. My brother says I mythologize him, and I go, well, if you're going to mythologize someone, you might as well mythologize your father. And much like Clarissa's father, and perhaps like yours, since you dedicate an epigraph theirs to your father. So I dreamt that this is after my father died. I dreamt that he was a king, and he appeared to me on this beautiful white horse dressed in crimson and vermilion and ermine. And
wow.
He reached down and he handed me a key. And he said, this is a key to a box. Here's where the box is. So I thanked him and I went to look for the box, which I knew where it would be. But as I went towards the box, a deluge appeared. And water just kept running down the mountain towards me. And eventually I was underwater, but I knew where the box was. So I swam toward it with the key. This is sad. And I got to the box, but I was running out of breath. And I just couldn't get the key into the box. And then I had to rise to the surface. I know. And
oh,
I never,
gosh.
I still don't. It's like, you know, this, the idea that, and I had another dream, we're selling your book, but the idea of, you know, you find a room in a dream, and it's, Freud would say that's part of your subconscious. It's a room you didn't know you had in a house. Get that kind of dream. It was that kind of dream for me. But when I read
yes, I can imagine that it echoed your own dream. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I thought, I didn't open the box. What's inside? And I still don't know. So
that right. You don't know.
I know. So why does two things? Why does Clarissa, and I don't want to get too, why does she dislike several names or dislike hearing names? What is it about that that makes her, and then she takes names from those people that she loves,
yes,
admires.
We don't know her real name.
No.
We don't.
We learn one name.
A bit like my dear Daphne du Maurier, if you remember Rebecca, we don't know the heroine's name. Mrs. De Winter, number two, we don't know her name.
Mrs. De Winter, she's a bitch.
Yeah, right. Dr. De Winter, you mean?
Yeah, Dr. De Winter.
Yeah, but that's a tribute to Daphne du Maurier.
Yeah, it's what's like...
Because Maxim de Winter is Rebecca's husband. And so the second wife, we don't know her name. So Clarissa, we don't know her first name. We only know her pen name, what we call in French her nom de plume. We know her husband's names, but we don't know her name. And that was a way of sort of, I guess, really showing that she comes into her own because she's a writer. She doesn't use her father's name. She doesn't use her husband's name. She doesn't use a maiden name. She uses a name that she invented, Clarissa, because it's a tribute to Virginia Woolf, and Katzeff, because Katzeff is Romain Gary's real name.
And in the farewell notes, as you say, the first, I think, is some small solace to Leonard, because the fact that you didn't find the body for 3 weeks and all that was horrible, and he finds her staff, her cane. But she says in the letter, so beautiful, she says, it's not your fault. No one could have made me happier than you.
Yes, it's such a heartbreaking letter.
And then she says, look, I can't even write this. But she does. But then Roman's note is like, it's not the same. It's kind of like, but he gives away his name. He gives his name away in that note. And he also says, which is a sidelight, but it's interesting because I'm not doing this because of Jean Seberg. I'm not doing this because of my wife.
Yeah, exactly.
But she was so treated so horribly by the FBI and by...
Yes, that's a terrible story. It's true that I think American readers would know who Romain Gary was because of his link to Jean Seberg, obviously, which was a terrible story when you think of it.
We don't have to go off on that. That'll take too long.
Yeah, okay.
But I just hate J. Edgar Hoover, and he's screwed even John Lennon's life. Anyway, so
okay.
So do you, I mean, you take a lot of the characters in the book, and this is actually the crux of the book, which I won't spoil, but when you write, when many of the people write or do things in the book, they do it in two different languages.
Yes.
And I was wondering, well, in the book, you have conversations with several people in which you ask them, they ask you. But in your own life, as you say, the characters in the book do talk about how they do things. But the question that remains unanswered for many of them, if not all of them, is how do they think? Do they think in both languages, and when do they switch? How does that happen?
Well, I think that the fact when you're bilingual, meaning you've really grown up learning two languages at the same time, you don't know what language you think in or dream in. You just don't know. I have no idea what language my dreams are in. It's kind of sad, actually, to not remember that or to not know that. But I wanted to study that here for reasons that the reader will discover. I wanted to try and dig into what really does being bilingual mean. Does this mean that you have to choose one language over the other? Does this mean that you feel more comfortable? At one point, there's this kind of fight between Jordan and Clarissa. Jordan is Clarissa's daughter, and they usually speak French. And because Clarissa is going through this trauma coming back and being convinced that she's being spied on, she's very sensitive and flies off the handle very easily. And therefore, she decides to speak to Jordan in English during this fight. And Jordan can't stand it because she's used to speaking to her mother in French. So it's kind of like a war of languages, which is something that I can really relate to. For example, I speak English to my mother, but French to my dad. I speak English to my brother and sister. I speak French to my husband. I speak English to my son and French to my daughter.
It is strange, and I wish I. And it does make me envious, and I don't. I think it would make most people envious, but it's interesting because once again, that's a parallel. Whether you say it's autobiographical or not, there are some, and that is one. Yeah, that is definitely one. I like the way that this is off the wall. I love the way that we talked about her being 75 or thereabouts. I love the way she runs up the stairs because I do that too.
She's 72. She was born in 1961, and this is 1930, and this is 2034. Yeah, she's, you know, this book is going to become a movie, which is very exciting.
Wow.
I'm really happy about that. And so now they're thinking about an actress, and I have one in mind. And she, for me, she's the most terrific, badass, exciting 70-year-old lady I can imagine. That's Helen Mirren.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Wouldn't she be the perfect Clarissa?
Yes.
Honestly? Yeah.
You'd have to give her longer hair. But
yeah, right. But, I mean, she's got those blazing blue eyes.
Oh, yeah.
She has that British accent.
Well, it's
and
like
she's
when...
got that amazing figure, and she's got that, you know, that drive.
Have you seen pictures of her when she was, like, in her 20s?
Yes.
It's just like Clarissa when the guy looks at her and thinks... she was beautiful, but then realizes she still is beautiful.
Exactly.
And then her braids. But, you know, yeah, she would be perfect. And also because she has that same ability, like when Dr. De Winter knocks at the door and kind of puts her foot in the door so Clarissa can't close it. And she says, can I come in? And she goes, nope, you cannot come in. And yeah, Helen Mirren could do that really well.
Do you know Helen Mirren?
Just from films.
Does she listen to your show?
I have no idea. The strangest people listen to my show. I don't know who they are.
Well, if ever somebody listening knows Helen Mirren, could you please have her contact me or you or whatever, or my publicist so that we can have her read the book?
It might actually happen because, you know, generally someone who listens to something probably knows somebody who knows somebody. And so, yeah, it could happen.
Well, now we know that the movie rights have been sold. So that's exciting.
Exciting, much like Sarah's Key. Well, the other thing is the book is very cinematic. It is cinematic.
It is.
And also, some of the reviews imply that there is not a lot of suspense here. But there is.
I don't know. I don't read reviews.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But the thing
about read them.
The reason why I think there is a lot of suspense is because, and I'll be careful here, is because you're not sure of people.
And you're not sure of what Clarissa is seeing or feeling, like during this terrible heat wave she goes through, and then when she goes down into the her neighbor's apartment, and she's confronted with that that terrifying robot. I find that quite suspenseful. I was scared myself writing that. I don't want to meet a Bardi ever.
Yeah, and that was kind of a departure for you to create that creature, right?
You know, but what I want to point out, though, is that everything in my book already exists. I'm just taking it one step higher. Robots exist. Sex robots exist. Connected bathrooms exist. Drones exist. Artificial intelligence is already here, invading our lives. Virtual assistants. Everything that's in this book is there, only it's in 15 years' time.
And it will be worse. All these books now, I've been interviewing people that are books about the near future. I realize after I read them, they're not about the near future. They're about now.
Of course.
And that's what's so scary.
It is scary. And that's why some readers feel frustrated. Not all of them, but some of them feel frustrated because they get to the end of the book and I don't give all the answers. And my answer to them is, this book is about the future and it's about resilience. It's about how we can become paranoid, like Clarissa does, because she's convinced that people are spying on her. Is she right? Is she wrong? We don't know. But what we know is that she has a point and that the future can make us nervous. And all this technology and all these devices which are monitoring everything we do can make us very wary of what we want to share online or what we want to do online.
Oh, God.
Clarissa has her own reactions to this. And I like open endings because I think people, it makes readers think about what's next. And interestingly enough, Daphne du Maurier, who's right here, by the way, always was also fond of open endings, because I think that a closed ending where you have all the answers to everything you've brought up in a book, for me, is not a book which will make your reader go one step further. So I understand that it can be frustrating to not know whether Clarissa was right. I personally think that she was right, and she was right. We did. We won't say what that was, but that is. I agree with what she did. I think she was right.
And you're mirroring things I say in the interview all the time, that some readers, and I hate to use this word, like with chick lit, they like their books wrapped up at the end.
But I don't write chick lit.
I know. And what I'm saying is, some people like to have it in a box with wrapping paper and a bow.
Yeah, and actually, some lady on Instagram said to me yesterday, I really enjoyed your book, but the ending made me so worried, so I'm only giving you 3 stars. I thought, well, fine. And then I said, well, you know, why do you want to give 5 stars? Oh, because I want to have, you know, to be handed the ending on a platter and understanding everything about it. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I don't write those kind of books.
No, the idea is
to keep my reader awake.
The reader is as much a part of the book as the writer, and you want the reader to close the book and say, I wonder if, oh no, maybe, well, I'm not going to say this, but like even at the end, maybe he, or like Mia, you make Mia so beautiful. Yeah. Why is she so beautiful? Why is Mia White so beautiful?
Mia's are also terribly worrying because you don't know. So she's this young woman, this fan. You know, us writers, we do get fans who want to come close to us and who want to get to know us. And so is Mia a spy or not? We don't know. Same thing about Jim Perrier, the neighbor. Is he just some, you know, drug addict who's imagining all these things and making her worried? Everything I place in that book is like a chessboard. And I do not want my reader to be guessing anything in advance. I just want my reader to think, oh, wait a minute, what did she mean here? Do I have to pay attention to this? Should I open this door? Oh no, what's behind that door? And I think some readers, not all of them, like perhaps to understand everything that there is to be understood. But I believe that writers have that strength, that power to take you into another world. And the reader has to trust that writer and to be swept away, even if it's to be taken to a place that's uncomfortable, out of your comfort zone.
And the way you do it in subtle ways too. Well, One that's not as subtle as it could be would be at the fire alarm when she kind of, Mia is whatever. You don't know. She never knows. And the other thing is the way they're having lunch and then Andy rushes in and changes the dynamic completely. And Mia, there's this little bit of a look, just like Jordan has that little bit of a look. And Clarissa goes, I wonder, why is she looking at me like that? And of course, it's because the robot and Andy. Yeah. But yeah, those little things where you go, yeah, why, you know, you figure that, those you're told, you understand why. But there's so many other things, like I said, and I can't go too far, but the idea is that,
You know that Flowers of Darkness, according to Virginia Woolf, means paranoia. Because Flowers of Darkness is a sentence in Mrs. Dalloway, where Mrs. Dalloway is told that she's not invited to a party that her husband is invited to, and therefore she becomes slightly paranoid about this. And I just love that expression, the Flower of Darkness, meaning that moment where you think, wait a minute, is this something that I'm completely imagining? Or is this really happening? And all the book is about that. And that's why I think some readers are uncomfortable, because I don't tell them, yes, this is reality. No, this isn't. Oh, be careful here. You know, this is maybe not what you think. Paranoia is the dark pit that you fall into when you don't have the answers, right? And I want my reader to feel paranoid.
I felt paranoid for Clarissa from the very beginning of the book, and the initial entries with regard to, I'm getting real close here, the initial entries with regard to Virginia Woolf and Romaine. I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, here's what they said. I wonder if this might be what happens. You know what I mean?
Yes. Because there's this mirroring between those two writers, their shadows loom over the book. There's Clarissa's path, which is interwoven with her own past and her own experiences, of course, and then there's what she's heading to. And then little by little, the reader understands that she has allies, who her allies are. So in a way, you could say that this is a woman's very personal voyage into this paranoia. And then, of course, there's something we have not talked about at all, which is really at the heart of the book, and we can't talk about it too much because we can't give things away. But there's the rather unpleasant revelation of her husband's infidelity.
I'll say.
Yeah, yes. Well, somebody said to me, wow, you have so much imagination. Does this even exist? And I'm like, sorry, it does.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going to say what it is, but it does exist.
Well, the other thing is she doesn't know which is worse.
Exactly. And neither do I.
Neither do I.
No, I don't know.
All right, let's get away from there.
Okay, let's turn that page. Okay.
So do you like cats?
Actually, yes. I have... I'm lucky to have my husband is not a cat person, unfortunately, but I have my son has a beautiful cat called Mistral, and my daughter has a beautiful cat called Nikita. And Ooh. So I'm kind of like their cat granny. And I love those cats. And I really wanted a cat to be in this story, because cats are such elegant, silent creatures. And the fact that they, all of a sudden, this cat like just freezes, you know, and looks up at the ceiling when there's nothing to be seen. That really also is probably the first thing that triggers Clarissa's paranoia, the cat.
Yeah, because she's not familiar with cats, she goes, well, look, is this normal behavior? And that's another thing that, you know, it gives you pause, no pun intended. It gives you pause because it's like, okay, is it because she doesn't know cats, or is this cat like other cats and senses things that people don't? Yeah, it's funny. Cats, robots, who Francois is dallying with.
Yes.
And the other thing is the brooch, the jewelry. So the brooch is valued.
Yes, the heritage story.
Yeah, that's interesting too. What are the what's the nicknames of the two cousins?
Wait a minute. I'm it's coming back in French now. Mimsy and Mamsy.
Mimsy and Pims. I can't remember.
No, I can't remember either. You've caught me there. It's my own book. Yeah, I went through a rather unpleasant heritage story myself quite a few years ago, and I just wanted to show how we can divide a family, really, and how sometimes you just realize that you've been cut out of a will completely, and you just think, oh my God, you know, why did this happen, or why did that person who I thought I was close to, who is my family, who is my flesh and blood, why did that person do that? And I also wanted to show the fact that when you're of two such different nationalities, French and English, especially with the Brexit, I mean, that the Brexit,
which is in the book,
because it's still, you know, and I think that unfortunately the Brexit and its aftermath is going to be there for quite a long time, and for us Franco-British, it's probably one of the most difficult things to go through psychologically, because you really feel like your roots are divorcing completely.
I like the way that Clarissa is really pissed off about the change of the name of the Eurostar.
Yeah, right. I laughed about that too.
It's nice when you laugh when you write.
It's true. But this book that has some funny moments, but not most of them are more scary, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, my father is like your father, and he's like the father in the book, who's 98 and in better shape than I am till a certain point. But my father always used to say, he said so many things, but one of the things he said was money changes everything. And I didn't, most of the things he said, I didn't understand until therapy and 20 years later. and that was one. I thought, well, our family is so close. They're so close. And you think that could never be sundered, that could never be torn apart by anything.
No, but they are.
I know.
And money and heritage and wills. And I hadn't realized that until it happened to me. And so that's, although I made it very different here. And I do realize that people go through this so often. So often do we hear stories of people who, you know, they open up a will and their world falls apart because they didn't get anything, not even a, you know, a souvenir or something. Sometimes we're not even talking about money. We're talking about, you're left with nothing, not even a book, a photo, an object. So it is sad. It is sad.
Another thing my father said coupled with that was when I was practicing law and all my friends were big shots, and they would, towards the end, they would send pictures on Facebook in their private plane, and this is sunset over whatever, Paris. And I would respond, I've seen sunsets before as well. And then they would brag about their Lamborghinis or their this or that. And then I would tell my father, and he would go, all it takes is money. Mm. Which was another one that I didn't understand. I'm going, yeah, Dad, it's money. And he goes, that's all it takes. And I realized, okay, that doesn't, it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. So I can go on with my father's sayings. One thing I wanted to do with Clarissa, and I thought you were wrong at first, and then I realized, no, you were 100% right, because I've been in that position many times, and it deals with spaces, which you are interested in, I'm interested in, Clarissa is obsessed with. I wanted to shout to her, get out. Just get out.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's really hard to get out.
Well, especially when you're that age. She is fragile. She's in her early 70s. She probably doesn't really know where to go. She's also got her pride. You know, she's got quite a character, Clarissa. She's not a... And I think she was probably still reeling from the shock that she went through when she discovers what François does. And she's probably also quite stupefied that she was accepted into this very ritzy, state-of-the-art CASA residence. She probably thought she'd never get in, that they'd take, you know, much younger people, much people with much more credentials, people with, you know, best-selling status, whatever. So she was probably quite impressed that she actually made it there, although she feels uncomfortable immediately, as we know. And I agree with you. I would have left it right away, but we're not Clarissa.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, that, like I said, at first I didn't understand.
And actually, wait a minute. If she had left, they wouldn't have been, the book wouldn't have existed. So
I know. She would have been safe. She would have been safe, but I would not have. I would have had to put the book down. There wouldn't be one, as you said. Well, so to conclude, it was interesting to me when she first, the whole thing started, and Natalie and the bookstore, and I have this bookstore, and I'm thinking, oh, people don't read books. Yeah. And but that's how it started. She pulled the book off the wall, handed it to him, and he explained that there is this thing, and then she calls him back, and he doesn't know what she's talking about. Thinks she's baddie, all that. But one of the COVID paradoxes, and there are many, is that my bookstore has gotten much more popular since COVID.
Well, that makes me so happy. Here too in France, there's been a boom in the bookstores because bookstores are learning to click and collect, even if some of them are closed. Here in France, thank God, right now they're open, but they were closed for 2 months. When this book came out in France
right.
last year, that was such bad luck. But people are going back to reading, and I'm really happy about that. So I think Clarissa maybe is a little pessimistic in what she says, that people don't read anymore.
There were so many things I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know that Ingram would drop ship to anybody. They didn't before. I didn't realize that people like to come in because in a bookstore, there was never really more than 10 people. And also just the idea that people... this is a nice place to go. It makes them feel normal again. And then, of course, just as in your book, you know, it's, I have library letters in my bookstore, which is something, one of the main reasons I have a bookstore is because there's library letters. And other than like Amazon, you might even mention this. You do mention it in Amazon where they give you recommendations of books. And yeah, you like the other books.
Automatic recommendations.
Then you buy them, but okay, great. And it does that when I looked up your book, your books, if you enjoyed this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, no, that's not really true. But when you have library letters, you climb up, you find the book you want.
I'm getting an incoming call. Hold on. I'm going to try and get rid of it.
Okay.
Somebody's trying to call me. It's my husband.
All right. Well,
he's forgetting that I'm online. I'll tell him.
Okay, that's no problem. We can just edit that out or leave it in. It doesn't make a difference. But what I was going to say, and we will conclude now so you can talk to him, is that when you go up a library ladder, yes, you do find the book that you want, but you also find the book on either side. And
well, that's right. You find the book that you've never heard of, or you find the book that's a surprise.
And that may be the book that changes your life.
Exactly. And that's why you guys are so precious. Thank you.
Well, that's
for
a good
here.
Way to end it with a compliment to me.
Absolutely. Merci beaucoup.
So call your husband back. And
I will.
I don't want to wait another 10 years, but if I do and I'm in a wheelchair, I will look fit.
Because you look wonderful.
So do you. You don't look any different than any of the interviews that I looked at from the publishing.
You. I have changed, but I mean, you know.
You're still running upstairs.
I live on the 7th floor and I don't take the elevator.
Likewise. At our building, my two brothers and I have this business, and we are the only 3 people who do not take the elevator. And I admire all of us for that.
Okay. Well, I'm really glad to have answered all your questions. And thank you so much for liking this book and understanding it. It's early days for me here. Okay, it's had its career in France, it's had its career in the Netherlands, but it's also great to know that it's coming out in the States despite the pandemic.
Yeah,
you read it carefully.
2 days ago, and it was on the back bookshelf, you know, with a warning: do not put this out before. And I always think, what if I put it out? Am I going to get arrested? So sometimes I do. Sorry. But, you know, I just think, well, it's here. Let's just put it
out. Oh, well, thank you so much. Really,
you're welcome.
It was a great pleasure answering. And do let me know when this is up so I can share it on my Facebook page and Twitter page and whatever.
Yeah, okay. I will
social
do
media.
So. All right.
Merci
Tatiana, thank you so much.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.